Batting cleanup on our panel today is Dr. Brad Thompson, professor of history and political science at Ashland University. He is author of John Adams and the Spirit of Liberty from the University of Kansas Press, a volume which was awarded the prize for best first book in political theory by the American Political Science Association. He is editor of the Revolutionary Writings of John Adams, published by Liberty Fund, the recent collection entitled Anti-Slavery Political Writings, 1833 to 1860, A Reader, and he is co-editor of the four-volume Encyclopedia of the Enlightenment, published by Oxford University Press. Brad?
Thank you very much. The title of my talk today is Our Killing Schools. America's schools are in a state of crisis today, and no one seems able to do anything about it. Record numbers of our children are failing elementary competency tests, and a mass murder is more likely to occur in a school today than in any other public place. Here are the facts. Since 1995, there have been 7 major school shootings. The death toll stands at 29 with scores injured. At least 40 boys, ranging in ages from 10 to 13, have been arrested around the country for conspiring to bomb their respective middle schools during the last 3 or 4 years. 2/3 of U.S. fourth graders read below grade level. 3/4 of American students write below the proficient level. 3/4 of American high school seniors were deemed not proficient in civics, and American high school students recently ranked 2nd from the bottom in world math and science rankings. It gets worse. The moral decline in our schools is even more precipitous. In Illinois, an 11-year-old girl was awarded $110,000 for being sexually abused by her basketball coach. In Chicago, 2 10-year-old boys were arrested for sexually assaulting an 8-year-old girl in a school storage closet. In New York City, a male teacher was arrested for raping 2 8-year-old boys. The teacher has AIDS. In Portland, Oregon, a first grade girl was sexually molested by 2 second grade boys. In Indiana, an elementary school principal recently kidnapped and sexually abused an 11-year-old girl from his school. In Cincinnati, 5th grade girls were caught swapping sex for soda money. In Delaware, boys at one high school were asked to wear dresses in order to celebrate cross-dressing day. In Washington State, an 18-year-old lesbian has been crowned as the prom king of her high school. In New York City, Mother's Day has been banned because some mothers have 2 mommies or 2 daddies. And in a small town in Texas, 5 fourth grade boys were suspended from school for performing oral sex on each other at the back of class during reading hour. Now, how are we to understand the intellectual and moral bankruptcy in America's schools? Here is my argument. The source of the destruction of the minds and souls of America's young people is an education establishment bent on using our children as their guinea pigs for their bizarre experiments in schooling. The fact of the matter is that most of our public schools today are intellectual and moral wastelands. As a college professor, I meet hundreds of current and recently graduated high school students every year, and I am struck by 4 factors. First, students don't believe in very much and they are unwilling to make moral judgments. Second, they have artificially inflated opinions of themselves and are unwilling to tolerate criticism. Third, they are poorly educated. And finally, they all hated their high school experience. The result, I think, is an explosive mixture of nihilism, narcissism, ignorance, and resentment. Now, allow me to go through each of these points. First, moral relativism. Though the schools do not teach ethics as a part of the regular curriculum, the moral ethos of our education system is dominated by the anti-principle of moral relativism. The one sure thing that a college professor can expect from new students is that they do not believe in moral absolutes. that they are unwilling to judge morally the opinions or actions of others, even when they disagree with them. Beginning in elementary school, students are taught that all lifestyles are equal and that they should not discriminate between them. What this means most of all is, do your own thing and don't judge me. Our schools have extended the teaching of tolerance to such a degree that our children are unable and unwilling to judge reprehensible ideas and actions. Second, bogus self-esteem. Related to moral relativism, but incorporated more systematically into the curriculum, is the dogma that children should be constantly told how good they are. Positive reinforcement for deeds well done has been transformed by the education establishment into indiscriminate praise, so that children will feel good about themselves regardless of whether their ideas or actions are praiseworthy or not. Now, the problem with this binge in juvenile self-love is that children with unjustifiably high opinions of themselves are becoming aggressive and even violent when confronted with criticism or teasing. A child's self-esteem is not something given. It is earned. Achievement is the source of self-esteem. Self-esteem is not the cause of achievement. It is not possible for children to experience pride in praiseworthy behavior if they aren't also capable of feeling a sense of shame when their behavior is shameful. But we must look deeper. The crisis of our schools is at heart, I believe, a philosophical issue that I turn now to my third and my major point, namely progressive education. The precipitous rise in school violence and general degeneracy over the course of the last several decades runs directly parallel with the rise of progressive education theories. Progressive education believes in a child-centered approach that emphasizes a child's self-expression and spontaneous impulses. In the last several decades, a particularly virulent strain of progressive education has infected our schools. Based on the idea that children discover or create their own knowledge, perverse fads such as whole language, the whole language reading technique, or something called whole math, have plunged American students into an abyss of ignorance, frustration, and cognitive meltdown. Whole language, of course, has been an extraordinarily dismal failure wherever it has been tried, anywhere in the world. The inability in the early years of school, in the early years of school obviously has dire consequences for a child's entire school experience. A child, for instance, who cannot read will become frustrated, distracted, humiliated, resentful, and eventually will seek attention in non-academic ways. We shouldn't be surprised then that some children suffer cognitive and emotional meltdown. Take the new math as another example. Today's new math textbooks are filled with pictures of the Amazon rainforest, the poetry of Maya Angelou, and the speeches of Bill Clinton. A typical math assignment will ask students to answer questions such as, and I'm not making this up, if math were a color, it would be fill in the blank, because fill in the blank. If math were food, it would be fill in the blank because fill in the blank. If math were weather, it would be fill in the blank because fill in the blank. Teachers in whole math classrooms are encouraged to always praise children for their unique and inventive answers, regardless of whether they are right or wrong. Is it any wonder then that our children are suffering from this kind of cognitive dissonance? That they are floundering in a miasma of confusion, which can only produce insecurity, aimlessness, and a permanent sense of bewildered, frustrated dissatisfaction. Children do have a natural curiosity, wonder, and a powerful desire to learn, as any parent knows. But they also abhor a vacuum. For many of our children, I fear, our schools represent a place of abandonment and betrayal. And finally, my fourth point, bad teaching. When I talk to high school students, they tell me virtually to a person the same thing, that high school is boring and unchallenging. It is not that they don't want to learn or that they find subjects such as algebra or history intrinsically boring. In fact, it's quite the opposite. When I press a little deeper, I learn that for most students, the problem is that they have teachers who aren't particularly good at what they do. The teachers don't seem to know their subjects very well, and they certainly don't have a passion for teaching. Now, we all, of course, know that there are great teachers out there, and some of us have had some. but they are in the minority. Let me ask you this question. How can we expect our teachers to be any good when we don't expect them to have real college degrees in real academic subjects? The single greatest problem with teaching in this country is that we force our teachers to have bogus degrees from so-called education schools where they take infantile courses in educational psychology, audiovisual technologies, and bulletin board design. Dissuaded from making moral distinctions, fed a daily diet of an I'm okay, you're okay philosophy, denied logic, knowledge, and truth, and driven by unknown fears and anxieties, today's young people are left with nothing but their untutored feelings and emotions as their guides through the trials and tribulations of adolescence. Thus, we should not be surprised when they respond with outbursts of rage and acts of violence when things don't go their way. The education establishment has responded to this crisis by turning our schools into something more akin to prisons than places of learning. Barbed wire, metal detectors, identification cards, closed-circuit television monitors, guards, and bomb-sniffing dogs are common features of today's schools. Worse yet, the school system treats our young people in the same way that the penal system treats the prison population. Class time is more like prison lockup. If Americans want to stop schoolyard violence and address the various social pathologies that increasingly afflict our young, if they want to turn our schools into serious places of learning, they should abandon this deadly experiment.